Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, 6.5 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, May the 2nd. Stay tuned. Coming up, we welcome in two distinguished guests from different perspectives to talk with you about the news of the week. Standing by, John Sharpless and Matt Rothschild. But first, Jean Purcell is with me to encourage you to make a pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. This is it, Jean, the last hour of this program this drive to support Wisconsin Public Radio.
It really is, and we've got a goal. Well, first of all, you know what we have to do is go back and thank everyone who called last hour, because we met and exceeded our goal for the last hour, and that is just
terrific.
Thank you,
thank you, thank you. Yes, we did exceed that $2,500 goal, and really grateful for the 19 of you who called in pledges totaling $3,400 in the last hour. That's great. Thank
it
you
is.
So much.
And 9 brand new members, and it's always nice to see that as well. Now, this hour, we've got another goal of $2,500, and I think we're going to make it, because this is one of the hours I know that I look forward to every week here on Wisconsin Public Radio, and I know a lot of you do as well. So get the calls out of the way early, and then just tune in and enjoy the rest of the hour of the Week in Review. Here's what you do. You make a pledge online. It's our safe and secure server at WPR.org. And you can also call our toll-free number at 888-202-2552. If this hour is one of the hours you look forward to, if this programming is some of the programming that you enjoy that you count on, call in now with a pledge. It's important that you do it. We have a short pledge drive this spring, and so every call, every pledge online makes a difference.
Yeah, this is certainly one of my favorite hours of the week as well, in part because I get to talk to two guests who know a whole lot about the issues of the day. I can sit back and let my guests do all the heavy lifting during this hour, but also because it's a way, it's reflective of what we try to do every single day on the Ideas Network. We look for guests from different perspectives. We try to provide a wide variety of political viewpoints on this program. We're reviewing a lot of the shows that we have done during the week itself, because we try to follow these issues on a daily basis. And this is an opportunity to kind of look back, reflect, and hear sort of from the right and from the left on all of the different issues of the week. How much is that worth to you? Are you willing to chip in to help bring you this kind of service each and every weekday? Is it worth $5 a month, a $60 pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio, or $10 a month, a $120 pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio? You get to decide. Any amount is needed and helpful. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And it's important to tune in and enjoy the voices that you hear here. You know, the points of view that we raise here at Wisconsin Public Radio are not necessarily those just in a black and white sort of fashion, because there are an awful lot of shades of gray that fit into the topics we discuss. Mm-hmm. And it's important that all those voices be heard. And Wisconsin Public Radio provides that forum. As listeners, you are a direct beneficiary of that. And you also are a direct supporter of all the work that we do here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Your pledges, your calls, your online pledges make up about 31% of our budget these days. It's the most important source of funding that we have, and we literally cannot do it without you. Make your pledge online at WPR.org, or you can call us toll-free at 800-202-2552.
Thank you so much. If you've already contributed during this drive or are already a member of Wisconsin Public Radio, we really do appreciate it. And thank you, Gene. We'll talk to you a little bit later. Come in with an update and let us know how we're doing. 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. Okay, now to what you really want to hear and to what your money goes for. Let's review the news of the week and welcome your calls to the call-in number 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. What happened in the news this week that you want to talk about? We will talk with John Sharpless, professor of history at UW-Madison, about it. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
And we will also talk with Matt Rothschild, who is editor of The Progressive. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, Joy. Thanks for having me in again.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So let's start with this.
Moving forward, Reverend Wright does not speak for me. He does not speak for our campaign. I cannot prevent him from continuing to make these outrageous remarks, but what I do want him to be very clear about, as well as all of you and the American people, is that when I say I find these comments appalling, I mean it. It contradicts everything that I'm about and who I am.
All right. So Barack Obama speaking forcefully about Reverend Jeremiah Wright's media tour of earlier in the week. He appeared on Bill Moyers over the weekend. He talked to the National Press Club and made a speech before the NAACP and repeated many of the controversial remarks that made news some many weeks ago. Matt Rothschild, did Barack Obama do what he needed to do there?
Oh, pretty much. But, you know, I wanted him to be a little bit angrier in, you know, I get angrier than that when I see a typo in the Progressive magazine. So I thought he could have been a little stronger. I thought the whole Reverend Wright scene was so lamentable. I mean, it was an exercise in vanity and buffoonery to some extent, and it almost sank Obama. And it's weird to see a preacher go out and shear his sheep in public, and I don't know exactly why he was doing that. But I do want to qualify that by saying a lot of what the Reverend Wright said in his opening remarks, for instance, to the National Press Club, I thought were, you know, very thoughtful on the history of the prophetic tradition in the Black Church and kind of a tour de force of racism in the U.S. history books. And also, he gave a very progressive critique of U.S. foreign policy, supporting apartheid and the Contras in the 1980s, and criticized the Iraq War, dying for a lie. And on social policy, he was good, too. You know, anti-poverty, pro-worker, pro-gay rights. His mm-hmm. church has been pro-gay rights in a way that few Black churches have been in the last 25 years. But then, you know, right off the bat at the Q&A, he just went, I don't know, he handled that 9/11 question with real disdain for the American people who died in that attack on 9/11. You know, reap what you sow was about as callous as you could say. And then even worse than that was his line about Louis Farrakhan, calling him one of the most important voices of the 20th and 21st century. I mean, I shudder for what's to come in the rest of the 21st century if he's one of the most important voices. And if you just want to look at the 20th century, I mean, where does he rank him? You know, right behind Einstein, right ahead of Freud? I mean, that was just ridiculous.
So do you think this Obama-Wright thing is behind us, John Sharpless?
Well, I think that as long as Wright finds an audience, he's going to pontificate. And like Mork, I really thought the bulk of his speech was some good old-fashioned Black minister critique of America. He clearly cuts loose in Q&A. I mean, when he actually does his sort of seat-of-the-pants repartee, that's when he returns some of these controversial themes that I think most Americans, regardless of race, find either perplexing or repugnant. I think Obama did what he had to do. He's obviously a man that doesn't show his anger. I sensed anger, but he's clearly a man who's very controlled. I've always been impressed when he's debating Hillary. He can have that Sphinx-like face, and I don't know what's going on in his head, but boy, I'd really love to know. He's clearly a very restrained man, and I thought it came a little late. I think he let the press play with this way too long. I think this is about, that speech should have been given about 2 weeks ago. But here's my prediction. It will make no difference in the fall if he's the nominee. I don't see this having any traction. I don't see any way for McCain to leverage this in any way that will diminish his candidacy. I think he will be haunted by the San Francisco quote about guns and churches long after this is over. I could see ads with that remark in it. I don't think the McCain people are going to touch this in the fall if he's the nominee.
What about before that, Matt Rothschild? Did this hurt him in terms of Indiana and North Carolina coming up?
Well, it's hard to know. I mean, the race, according to the polls, is tightening in both places, even in North Carolina, which was supposed to be an easy win for Obama. I mean, if Hillary Clinton wins Indiana and comes close in North Carolina, I think we'll look back and say, yeah, it did hurt him. If Obama has kind of stabilized here, then I think the worst may be over for him as far as the primary goes. I'm not as optimistic as John is in the fall campaign. Maybe McCain himself won't use the Reverend Wright, but I'm sure that there will be some Swift voters out there who are going to try to use it. And until it is proven to them that it's going to have negative repercussions for McCain, that it's going to, you know, mobilize the black community and turn off independent, moderate Republican women, for instance, or whatever demographic is important, until that can be demonstrated, I think they'll just keep running those clips.
Are you convinced, Matt, that the superdelegates will go for Obama and he will be the nominee of the Democratic Party?
I'm not 100% convinced. I think if Obama loses, for instance, if he loses Indiana and North Carolina, then you're going to see all the movement that has been toward Obama over the last several months to freeze in place and break a little bit the other way. But this week, we haven't seen that happen. In mm-hmm. fact, we've seen, you know, of course, the old head of the Democratic Party that Clinton appointed jump ship from Clinton to Obama. And mm-hmm. so there may be more of that happening if Obama does okay on Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, how do you see it going, John Sharpless?
I think it would be a profound mistake for the party leadership to take the nomination away from Obama if he's in the lead with the delegates. And I can't always figure out how Democrats determine delegates. They have some magic backroom formulas, unlike the absolutely clean operation over in the Republican House. So it's hard to determine, but I guess if the pundits are correct, he can't lose on delegates no matter what. Apparently, if Hillary even sweeps the four remaining big ones, she still is short more than about a half a dozen, I think. Mm-hmm. The leadership would be hard-pressed to take that nomination. And here's their problem. Even if the Clintons can make a sound argument that she's more competitive in the swing states that are key, like Pennsylvania and Ohio, where the Republicans and Democrats have slugged it out in recent years, what the leadership will be looking at is losing, at least until Obama runs again, the African-American vote. They will feel cheated, and young people will feel cheated. And that will damage the party for a while.
Let's talk about one of the issues on the campaign trail this week. And Laverne in Monroe starts us out. Hi, Laverne. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hello.
I believe the economy is the number one problem. And when you read the Forbes magazine, the billionaires are doing great while the middle class is just disappearing. Hillary Clinton wants to have a tax the gas companies for this, the oil companies for this gas tax to make up the difference. And I think that's all right. They should tax the gas companies as well as the hedge fund dealers.
Yeah. So we have John McCain saying, let's have a gas tax holiday. Hillary Clinton says, hey, sure, let's do that. Let's suspend the federal gas tax, the 18-cent a gallon federal gas tax for the summer. Hillary added, but then let's tax the profits of oil companies to make up the difference. And Barack Obama on the campaign trail saying, hey, this is pandering, this is a gimmick. And no, we should not suspend the gas tax. John Sharpless, what do you make of that proposal?
Right now we're seeing that Obama has better economists than the other two. Suspending the gas tax for the summer would just be nonsense. We would lose an extraordinary amount of money that should go to our highways. For the foreseeable future, we're going to be driving cars on highways, and that's where the money should be. Second, it might even have a reverse effect. It might even encourage more people to drive when they should be cutting back on their driving. And so I don't think it does much. Taxing excess oil profits, we've done that before. We tried it. It was not successful. Bless her. I don't know how she's going to do it. One of the problems is that, and I'm sure Mort with his progressive philosophy here can go on about this, multinationals can shield profits from American taxation in a way that they can avoid this. And that's what they did with the last excess profits tax.
Matt?
Well, I'm in favor of windfall profits tax. I think the profits that the oil companies are making, the $10 billion, $11 billion a quarter profits, are just obscene while we're paying for it at the pumps. I do have problems with, oddly, I do have problems with the repealing the gas. I mean, problems with the gas tax, because I don't like sales taxes, period, with the exception of sin taxes for cigarettes and alcohol, because that might save people's lives. But sales tax on a good that is crucial for people like gas is really regressive. And there are a lot of people who are lower-class people, middle-class people who can't afford to live near their job because the housing price is so high. They have to drive 20, 30, 40, and in California sometimes 70 miles to work and back. And this tax is really hurting them, along with the ridiculously high cost of gas. Anyway, I don't know why those people, majority of the American people, should pay the price for GM and Ford's idiocy and for the government's lack of muscle in making the car companies increase the miles per gallon to a decent way that we could protect our economy. A better way to go, if you want to help the economy and also help the environment, is to give people pretty decent rebates for buying cars that are much more fuel efficient than the ones they have.
Yeah. Can I step in here? Something that's been poorly covered in the news but was highlighted this week with the trucker protest in Washington is a major, major crisis in trucking. My brother lives, works for the government in Nevada, and he says the local newspapers are filled with stories of big rigs, expensive rigs, being abandoned in truck pull-off areas because the driver is quasi-independent. Mm-hmm. The rig is heavily leveraged. It's essentially a house on wheels.
Right.
He owns it, but he's usually indebted to a trucking corporation and banks. Literally, they run out of fuel, they're at their wits' end, and they hitchhike away.
Oh, okay.
And if the trucking industry collapses, it will be a disaster for our economy, and I can't believe that no one's addressing this. It's a quiet, it's a quiet story that is not receiving the coverage that it should.
I talked to somebody from the Truckers Association about these protests, but that was a couple of weeks ago. Didn't realize it was quite that serious. Let me take another caller on the economy, Dave in Wanakee. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. This is the fifth anniversary of Mission Accomplished, so I think it's apropos that George Bush blamed the Democrats for the rise in the price of gas and didn't seem to make the jump that the Iraq War might have something to do with it. It seems to me it's like an arsonist starting a huge forest fire and then later in the summer complaining that the government isn't providing good camping facilities.
Yeah, we only have a short amount of time because of a break coming up. Matt, the president blaming Congress on the bad economy?
Yeah, and he doesn't have a magic wand, too. I mean, he hasn't done really much at all for this economy. In fact, while the economy has been going down, he's opposed extending unemployment benefits. He's opposed a jobs program. He's opposed a revenue sharing program with the states and localities. The Iraq War, as Dave points out, has not helped oil prices at all stay at a more stable place. So I think rather than blaming the Democrats for not, you know, allowing the oil companies to go into ANWR, Bush might want to look at the mirror.
John?
I think the current economic troubles are extraordinarily complicated. The housing sector, fuel prices are maybe associated with Iraq. They may not be, but it's an issue that we've had to face for three decades since Jimmy Carter reminded us that we, you know, obviously drink oil for breakfast. We are kind of facing, it's sort of the end of the 70s. We're facing the Piper on a host of things right now, and I'm not sure any of these candidates or the president has any kind of clue about this disaster.
I'm sure the president doesn't.
We will talk a little bit more about the Mission Accomplished anniversary and the war in Iraq and other related issues after we take a very short pause. This is the Friday Week in Review, talking with John Sharpless, professor of history at UW-Madison, and Matt Rothschild, editor of The Progressive. 1-800-642-1234 if you would like to call in to talk about the news of the week. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. More of the Week in Review in just a moment, but we need to do a brief review of how we're doing in our spring membership drive right now. And joining me to do that is Gene Purcell. Hello again, Gene.
And hello again, Joy.
Let me put your mic on, then people can hear you.
Ah, that's okay. How it works. Hello again, Joy. Good to be here. And we've got a $2,500 goal for this hour. So by the time 9 o'clock rolls around, we need to have $2,500 in the bank if we're going to stay on track for this pledge drive. Right now, we're doing all right. We've got about $400 there, so a little over $2,000 to go. Make your phone call now at 888-202-2552. And don't forget, you can also pledge online at WPR.org. Support the programming you hear every day. Here to support the programming you're listening to right now, the Week in Review here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
That's right. Your contribution helps pay for all of what you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio, all the costs that we have in producing and broadcasting radio programs. Your contribution goes to all of that. One third of the budget comes from listener contributions. This is listener-supported radio. And you, the dear listener, help us do that by calling 888-202-2552 or pledge online at WPR.org. How much should people pledge, Gene?
Well, you know, that's a big question, and I think it's a question that only you can answer because, first of all, we all have different resources. Some of us have a lot of money. Some of us don't have so much. A lot of us use the service at different rates. Some people listen a couple of times a week. Some people listen, you know, for 12 hours a day. So think about how much you listen. Think about what your budget can stand, and then call in with a pledge. So maybe you can afford a $60 pledge if you've never made a pledge before. That's just $5 a month, a good way to get your feet wet, become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. Maybe you can afford a $120 pledge. $10 a month, you are qualified for the member benefits card. And, you know, that is also a very substantial donation. Whatever the level, we appreciate all the pledges, and every single one of them makes a difference. The important thing is that you do make a call, you do make a pledge, and you help support the service that you use. WPR.org, or you can pledge toll or call toll free 888-202-2552.
I'm going to use my member benefit card tonight because it is my husband Rob's birthday today. And
wow,
we're going to go to Papa
birthday.
Phil's and eat Italian food. And Papa Phil's is one of the many participating restaurants that offers 2-for-1 entrees using the member benefit card. Some 250 around the state of Wisconsin and beyond. Mm-hmm. So that's just one of the benefits of the member benefit card. Yours for $10 a month or more. But the most important thing to do is just make that pledge of any amount because you value this service. You appreciate the guests and topics that you hear every day on the Ideas Network. You learn something new every day. You have your thinking challenged or maybe reinforced. 1-888-202-2552 or WPR.org. Make that pledge right now.
Absolutely. It only takes a few minutes to do, about 3 or 4 minutes, whether you pledge on the web or whether you pledge on the phone. We ask you a few basic questions, your name, where you live, how much you'd like to pledge. So think about that before you call. And then before you know it, yeah, 3 or 4 minutes will be over with and you'll have done your part for Wisconsin Public Radio. And it really is a pledge that will last all year because all year you can listen and realize that you are part of the bigger picture, that you had a hand in making all of this happen. And you can do it for a $60 pledge, for a $120 pledge, for a $500 pledge if you'd like to become part of the 9XM Leadership Circle. So a lot of options, a very short investment in terms of time for you, and it means an awful lot to everyone who uses the service. 888-202-2552.
Thank you very much, Gene. We'll hear from you at the end of the hour. We'll see if we make that $2,500 goal. And thanks to Flora in Minocqua, who recently called in a pledge. She says she listens all day and half the night. She's addicted to Wisconsin Public Radio. Flora, I'm glad you're addicted to us. Joan in Madison, thank you. She wants to help out. Gora and Vera in Madison pledged during this hour because they think this is the only balanced radio program around. Well, good. Gordon, thanks. And Vera, thanks for the pledge. And Jeannie in Wauwatosa says that the Ideas Network, Wisconsin Public Radio, the source of 99% of her information. Thank you so very much for your contributions to Wisconsin Public Radio. Now let's get back to the Week in Review with John Sharpless and Matt Rothschild. And let's talk about the caller made reference to the Mission Accomplished anniversary, which I believe was yesterday when the president was on the ship with the banner "Mission Accomplished" behind him. This was also April, one of the deadliest months for U.S. troops. Your thoughts, Matt Rothschild, on when this mission will be accomplished?
I don't think the mission's going to be accomplished. I think it was a disaster to go in there, and I said so at the time, and it's proving worse than even I thought it would be. And it's just it's heart-wrenching to see those numbers of U.S. soldiers dead go up. I mean, 50 more U.S. soldiers this month, the biggest since September, I think. You know, we're over 4,000 U.S. soldiers dead, 29,000 wounded, many of those badly wounded. And it just, you know, all this thing about the surge working, that seems to have faded a little bit. And I think the American people have come around on this. 68% now disapprove of this Iraq war. I think this is going to be an issue that's going to hurt John McCain. I don't see a way out except to withdraw. I mean, the way out is to get out. And McCain doesn't want to do that. I hope Obama and Clinton are going to stick to their pledges and get us out of there. But I wonder once they get in there whether they'll start listening to the generals and stay longer or start feeling that, you know, I don't want to be perceived as weak on defense, so I'm going to stay there or bomb Iran if Bush doesn't get there first. So I just think this is the definition of quagmire.
Yeah. John Sharpless.
Certainly not going very well. I remember it might be one of the very few times the Isthmus has ever interviewed me. Once in a while, I call it right. I said I thought we'd win the war and lose the peace. Mm-hmm. I'm glad I'm in print. Mm-hmm. you like your predictions that work in print. Mm-hmm. I think the real, as Mort knows, I supported the war, and I still support the goals of the war. But I think it's been extraordinarily poorly managed. I'm sure that if George Bush regrets anything, he regrets that that day with the banner, because mm-hmm. it's come to haunt him every year that this has been prolonged. I do think that it will be nearly impossible for either of the Democratic candidates to leave with any hurry. I think they'll both be saddled with a host of diplomatic problems that will ensue. It's one of those things where I guess you have to weigh off the problems of exit versus the problems of remaining there. If they're going to leave immediately, pull all the troops out, and allow whatever chaos that follows, and I could see, that's certainly an option. They're going to have to convince Israel and Saudi Arabia and other oil states in the region that somehow that's to their best interest, that they can sit there and watch that chaos ensue. And I think that opens the door for even more meddling from Iran in that environment of chaos, if not providing an excuse for their direct intervention. So I think it is. I would be really surprised, doesn't matter if it's Clinton or Obama, if they do win, that they can move very quickly on an exit.
Yeah. It's being reported that this week that the Pentagon has ordered new options to be drawn up for attacking Iran, and that the State Department has begun drafting an ultimatum that would tell Iran to stop meddling in Iraq or else. So will it be or else, Matt?
Well, Bush already gave that ultimatum. Mm-hmm. I mean, the State Department all has to do is go to whitehouse.gov and find out what the boss said. And, you know, there's the ultimatum because in his speech after Petraeus's latest report back, I mean, Bush said that Iran has a choice. You know, if it wants to live in peace with its neighbors, it's got to, you know, stop meddling. And if it keeps meddling, we're going to protect our troops and our allies, which is not very coded language. Mm-hmm. And I've been thinking for a long time that Bush is going to bomb Iran before he leaves office. It might be on January 19th, but he seems to feel that he has some moral obligation or religious obligation to go do that. And I think it would be catastrophic, and I think it's reckless. I think it would be another illegal war, and yet Congress, including Hillary Clinton, gave him a green light to do so. You know, the Kyle Lieberman amendment that Hillary Clinton voted for said not only that the Iranian Revolutionary Guard was a terrorist organization, that's what everyone reported, but the main thing was that it said that Iran is waging a proxy war against the United States and Iraq. Well, when you have Congress on record as saying Iran is at war with the United States, it does. That's like throwing red meat right in front of Dick Cheney. I mean, he's going to take that in his mouth and run with it.
You worried about this, John Sharpless?
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. And I find myself in an uncomfortable position of agreeing with Mort.
Matt.
Mm-hmm. I think that we can gain very little out of an attack on Iran, as frustrating as they are. They're clearly meddling. I'm sure they enjoy this whole thing. They're taking on the giant and making a mess of the giant's activities here. I'm reminded of the Cambodian incursion. Mm-hmm. You know, in a desperate attempt to bring resolution to the Vietnam War, we went into Cambodia, and it didn't do anything. Ultimately, it made a big mess out of Cambodia. And it didn't substantially alter the course of the Vietnam campaign. So I think they would have to look very carefully at the consequences here. I suppose, I actually think more of George Bush than other people do. I would be surprised if he exits on an attack. Yeah. That's irresponsible. If there's going to be an attack, it has to be fairly soon because this administration has to take responsibility for the consequences. You can't just, the last day you're president, drop a bomb and then leave it to the next president. And my suspicion is that McCain will give him a phone call and say, Mr. President, don't stick me with this. I'm having enough trouble winning this election without you starting another war.
I mean, there is a possibility he'll wage it, you know, sooner as opposed to later. And I think John is right that the rationale has changed now. It was until the NIE, the National Intelligence Estimate, came out in the fall, it was going to be Iran's getting this nuclear weapon. But that took some of the wind out of that rationalization. So now they're doing the Cambodia thing. They're meddling. They're having their own sanctuaries, or they're helping the enemy in Iraq. And I just don't think, you know, that is not a legitimate reason to go to war.
No. And the other problem with that is, I hate analogies to other wars because this war has its own dynamic. The problem with going in under the Cambodia analogy is that it's not clear what you bomb then. It's one thing, if there's a nuclear reactor, you go bomb the nuclear. But if you're trying to target the sources of training infiltrators, that's a hard, those targets are scattered all over the place. They can move around. I think if they want to secure Iraq from Iran, why don't they just get some divisions over on the border?
And it's not just Iran that's meddling. Saudi Arabia is supplying more of the people who are blowing themselves up than Iran is, and that's something that's hidden from the Americans.
And the Syrians. I mean, we're in the middle of a region where nobody really wants us.
Yeah. We'll take Milton in West Allis now. Hi, Milton. You're on the air.
Ahoy. Three prominent human rights groups, Amnesty International, Center for Constitutional Rights, and the International Human Rights Clinic at the New York University School of Law, have revealed that the CIA's filing of a motion for summary judgment in court this week, they're trying to avoid turning over more than 7,000 documents related to the secret ghost detentions and extraordinary rendition programs and torture. And 7,000 documents that were never provided to congressional oversight committees. we've got a kidnapping and torture bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm. All right, Milton, thanks. Yeah, we've got that story, I think, in our packet. Any comments, Matt?
Well, this is going to go down in history as one of the most appalling things that the Bush administration has done. Milton's absolutely mm-hmm. right. They've been torturing people and conducting the torture or directing the torture from the White House. And this has violated the Geneva Conventions, the Convention Against Torture, the War Crimes Statute, and the Anti-Torture Statute. This is one of the reasons George W. Bush and Dick Cheney should be impeached. There's no accountability for it. Cheney's Chief of Staff, Addington, was given a request to appear before the House Judiciary Committee, and he's not going to show up. And Cheney says, you've got no jurisdiction over me or my staff. And so we have lawlessness in the White House. And it is a terrible smear on our reputation. I didn't think I would live long enough to see the president and the vice president not only admitting that they're engaged in these kinds of techniques, but actually going up on Capitol Hill to try to get protection for it. I mean, I knew that the CIA has been torturing for the last 50 years. That's not a surprise, and we know that with John's colleague, Al McCoy, here at the History Department, but the brazenness of it is really breathtaking.
Yeah. John?
I think the courts, if this is appealed, will uphold the CIA's claim, and I'm uncomfortable with that. I'm a libertarian. I don't like big government, so this troubles me, but traditionally, in the Cold War, and now presumably the War on Terror, the CIA has been given the benefit of the doubt, and perhaps that's inappropriate. There's lots of doubt, but they are under national security claims. Again, I think the courts at the appellate, and if it goes to the Supreme Court, will find in their favor the withholding of documents. I might point out that they historically, on other occasions, in the 70s, for example, withheld documents, and the courts upheld their right to do so. And my suspicion is that they'll win this appeal now.
We need to take a short pause, and then we will talk about more issues in the news this week, talk a little bit about whether biofuel production is contributing to the global food crisis. That's in the news this week. And photo ID, the U.S. Supreme Court says it's constitutional to require voters to show a photo ID at the polls. And other issues coming up in just a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. You're tuned to The Week in Review with John Sharpless, professor of history at UW-Madison, and Matt Rothschild, editor of The Progressive. Shortened time, gentlemen, so let's whip through a few issues in the news this week kind of quickly here. The UN press conference this week saying that the U.S. and the European Union were one of the main causes of the current worldwide food crisis because we have taken a criminal path by contributing to an explosive rise in the global food prices through using food crops to produce biofuels. Ooh, those are quite harsh words. John Sharpless, are the biofuels contributing to this global food crisis?
One more time, the experts at the UN have come out with a loopy economic prognostication. This is just plain silly. The countries that have had problems with food shortages had food shortages before this, places like Ethiopia, Sudan, and elsewhere in Africa. This crisis is primarily caused by major shortfalls in rice production worldwide that have nothing to do with the United States. We have some, I might point out, contrived rice production here because of our mm-hmm. tariffs on rice. And most of the surplus corn that's being absorbed in ethanol production right now, I come from a farming family. If you'd gone to grain operators, say, 5 years ago, you would have seen mountains of corn, literally mountains of corn rotting. It was sitting on barges. Most of the ethanol is simply absorbing surpluses that have been generated in the corn sector for decades, and we've paid farmers and feed dealers to leave it there to rot. There has been, and this is important, there's always merit to even the most loopy arguments. There's been some substitution here. Since corn is producing very high return right now, a lot of American farms moved out of it into soybeans. Most of our soybean production was for consumption in Asia and abroad, mostly in Asia. And so there's been a rise in soybean prices. I predict within a farmers respond to these kind of things very quickly. I think within a year, you're going to see lots of land that has lie fallow because of government subsidy will come into production. You'll see farmers move back into soybeans. We have nothing to do with the rice crisis, nor does Europe, by the way. So this thing is simply the UN blithering one more time about a problem that doesn't have anything to do with
your
us.
Your thoughts, Matt?
Well, I don't agree with John down the line on this one. I do think biofuels are a problem. They're not as big a problem with the food crisis as some people are making them out to be, but they're a contributory factor. I do think the shortfalls we're seeing in rice and in other food commodities do have something to do with the United States, and they do so in this way, because the United States directed the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank over the last 25 years to tell developing, not only tell, but force, compel developing countries to stop a growing food for their own people, for their local market, for subsistence of their population, and open everything up to the market and let U.S. companies come in and dump rice in Haiti and other places and wipe out the local production there. And so countries now that used to be able to feed their own people can't feed their own people. And this was done, at economic gunpoint.
Let's move on to another issue this week. The U.S. Supreme Court upholds voter photo ID laws, or at least Indiana's law. It's constitutional to require people to show a photo ID at the polls. Democrats don't like this ruling very much, saying that this will disenfranchise poor people and older people. Wisconsin as well, battling over the past few years over this proposal. So will we have a voter photo ID law in Wisconsin, Matt Rothschild?
I sure hope not, because I do think that is the problem that you put your finger on, Joy, that, you know, poor people who don't have a car and a driver's license and a photo ID, people who are elderly, people who are in nursing homes who haven't, you know, driven for 20 years, they're supposed to go get a photo ID. This is a crude solution to a problem that barely exists. And I sure wish John Paul Stevens, who authored the decision, is usually a liberal, would have come out on the other side of it. He did leave a door open for challenges on other voter ID laws that might be even worse than the one that was before the court at that point. But according to that decision, these kinds of laws, though, are going to be viewed as legal until a court overturns them.
Mm-hmm. John Sharpless?
It's a sensible decision, and that's why I think Paul Stevens was in the majority on this. And it has nothing to do with conservative liberal. The Constitution clearly states that the management of voter laws are a state-level concern. It's very clear on that. And then the court has found subsequently that setting aside overt discrimination in the big classes, which the court set out, states are free to determine the mechanisms of voting. This is consistent with all of the decisions on this. There's also an argument to be made that there is one right that is contingent on the identification of the individual, and that's voting. There's an overwhelming necessity to know that people vote once and that they are in the jurisdiction in which the vote is legitimate. And the community, the state, the locality has the power to determine whether or not people are indeed part of the constituency. Other rights should, in my opinion as a libertarian, shouldn't be conditional on that. That's why I'm opposed to McCain-Feingold. I don't think you should get a permit for speech. But this is one case in which communities have the power to determine who is at the polls and who is not. I think what you'll see on this, what will be very interesting in the long run, is if it's subsequently shown in the actual application of these ID laws that groups are suffering discrimination, and it's just not hypothesized, then you will see the courts intervene to alter these laws.
Yeah, we just have a moment here, but I wanted to get to one last story in our weekend review. Any thoughts, either of you, on Former Republican Assembly Speaker John Gard saying he's going to try again. He announced he will run against Steve Kagan, who is the U.S. representative of the 8th Congressional District in northeastern Wisconsin. So looks like a rematch for the 8th, Matt?
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I had heard that Gard was going to do it. I mean, I don't like John Gard. I mean, he's Tom DeLay's bastard child. But, I think Kagan's got to be a little more forceful than he was in this statement. He was talking in platitudes and generalities, and John Gard was going, you voted for X, Y, and Z, all of them bad. I mean, Kagan's better be prepared here.
Yeah. John Sharpless?
I don't think Kagan is going to be – he barely won. I don't know if he's got a really strong track record, but the problem is that he managed to win, I think, in part because of anti-Bush reaction. It's a district that leans Republican. I'd love to live in Green Bay right now because I would announce against John Gard and we'd have one hell of a good primary. I just wish I lived in Green Bay.
Well, we're glad you live here, John Sharpless. Thank you so much, John and Matt, for being here. Really a pleasure.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah. Matt Rothschild is editor of The Progressive, and John Sharpless is the professor of history at UW-Madison, our guest this week for The Week in Review. And thank you for all of your participation this hour, too. We also thank you for all of the pledges so far this hour. Doing good, Gene Purcell.
You know, we're in great shape. We've got almost $1,700 in the bank right now, a goal this hour of $2,500. So just about $800 to make up in the next 6 or 7 minutes or so. And that is very doable with your pledge at WPR.org or toll free at 888-202-2552.
Pledge any amount to Wisconsin Public Radio. It all goes into the kitty to help pay for the programs that you value, to pay for the entire service of the Ideas Network and the NPR News and Classical Music Network, for that matter. You get to decide how much to contribute. You might consider a monthly installment of $10 a month. You can do that through electronic funds transfer. You can do it on your credit card. You can do it in fell swoop. We'll send you a reminder in the mail. It's easy to make that contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio, and you can pay for it whatever way you want to. Please do, though, make that commitment to become a supporter of this program and all of what you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. WPR.org, our safe and secure website. Make your pledge there or call 888-202-2552.
And just take a few moments to think about the breadth of the material that you hear, that you listen to, that you count on every day here at Wisconsin Public Radio, whether it's news or current events. Just on this particular program alone, Enjoy Cardine's show, 15 topics a week, more or less. And it's just a fantastic amount of things. And then you start bringing Kathleen Dunn into the mix, Larry Mueller, Talk of the Nation, Ben Marins, Gene Faraca, On Point, BBC, and you have a world of information available to you as simply as turning on the radio. And it's all possible because you are going to make a pledge at WPR.org. It's easy to do.
It is easy to do, and it feels good, and you know you are supporting a service that's valuable not only to you because you listen and get good information each and every day, but valuable for the entire state of Wisconsin and beyond. Not everyone can make a pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio, but you can, and your pledge will help bring this programming to everyone. 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. Make your pledge right now. Help us reach this $2,500 goal, which is just within our reach.
It is within our reach, and it's within your reach. You can help us towards that goal. You could probably fill the entire gap if you have the financial wherewithal to do so. 888-202-2552. You can join Jane in Waukesha. And she says, I feel it's time for me to participate. And Jane, that's exactly the attitude to have. If you have the financial wherewithal to participate, if you've been listening for a while, if you value the service, Well, it's great that you feel it's time, and I hope there are lots of other folks out there who feel exactly the same way that Jane does. Make your pledge online at WPR.org.
I enjoyed this Week in Review. Enjoy the Week in Review. I enjoy hosting all of the programs that I do on Wisconsin Public Radio because I learn something new every day. It's interesting to talk with so many well-known guests, other guests who just have something important to say, who have researched a topic, who know about current events or are an expert in a particular area. You probably learn something new every day. Maybe you learn something new every hour. That's more like it. How much is that worth to you? We love this ongoing lifelong learning, don't we? WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
888-202-2552. And it's interesting that you mention, I listen an awful lot. And as some of you may know, I fill in here from time to time, and I enjoy that immensely. But public radio is a big part of my media diet. And you know, with the satellites and with internet and all the other options we have, I would have expected my public radio listening to go down, but I haven't found that to be true. I do listen to the internet and satellite for certain things, but I still find myself tuning in to the same programs that I value on public radio every single day. And so it's odd. I listen to more things, but I listen to public radio as much as I ever did. And if you are like me, you realize the value in that, and that is where your pledge really does make a difference. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Certainly many listeners do recognize Gene's voice as someone who does fill in on this particular program. You will hear Gene's voice once again on Monday morning during this hour because Gene Purcell is the newly announced permanent director of the Educational Communications Board. He's been in the role for, on an interim basis, but now it's official, and we will talk more about how the ECB and Wisconsin Public Radio work in partnership coming up on Monday morning between 8 and 9. Phil Corvo, the director of Wisconsin Public Radio, also here because it's our regular first Monday of the month program that we do every Monday with Phil. So we can talk more about making Wisconsin Public Radio an even better service on Monday at this time. But right now, time for that pledge.
Absolutely. And I'm looking forward to the Monday morning conversation. And ECB is a partner in Wisconsin Public Radio, and we're asking you to be partners too. So make your pledge right now.
888-202-2552. 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. Please make your pledge now. Help us reach this goal and become a supporter of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine with Gene Purcell, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.